A knight and his men return to their castle after a long, hard day of fighting. "How are we faring?" asked the king. "Sire," replies the knight, "I've been robbing and pillaging on your behalf all day long, burning the towns of your enemies in the west."
"What?" shrieks the king. "I don't have any enemies in the west."
"Oh," says the knight, "now you do." In our lives, we all make enemies. Some people may not like you just because of who you are or what you stand for. But no matter where our enemies come from, the world tells us what to do with them. We are to rob and pillage and burn. Jesus, on the other hand, tells us to love and forgive. Jesus asks us to be all of the things that we are not. Jesus says, "Love your enemies and turn the other cheek. Don't judge other people, and forgive so that you will be forgiven." These are hard sayings. We don't want to hear them because they call us to what seems to be an unnatural life. Isn't it natural to hate your enemies and want to push back when somebody pushes you? And isn't it natural to judge other people and seek revenge instead of forgiveness? When Jesus calls us to love our enemies, to turn the other cheek, to forgive and not judge, he turns our world on its head. We feel these things are unnatural. We prefer a Christ who'd come to confirm our beliefs and tell us how great we are. Instead, we find a Christ who calls us to change. Jesus didn't come from heaven to earth to be reasonable. He came to be transformational. Jesus came to make a difference. He came to change our world and our lives. And to the extent that we follow his teachings, he does change our world and our lives. Why should we love our enemies? One reason is that love is the only force that can change an enemy into a friend. We never get rid of an enemy by returning hate with hate. We get rid of an enemy by getting rid of enmity. By its very nature, hate destroys and tears down. By its very nature, love creates and builds up. Love transforms with redemptive power. Another reason we should love our enemies is that hate scars the soul and distorts the personality. We know that hate is an evil force, but too often we think only of what it does to the person hated. This is understandable because hate can bring great damage to its victims. But there's another side we often overlook. Hate is also very harmful to the person who hates. Like an unchecked cancer, it corrodes the personality and eats away its unity. Hate destroys one's sense of values and objectivity. It causes you to regard the beautiful as ugly and the ugly as beautiful, to confuse the true with the false and the false with the true. A third reason we should love our enemies is that returning hate for hate multiplies hate, adding a deeper darkness to a night already devoid of stars. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. Hate multiplies hate, and violence multiplies violence in a downward spiral of destruction. This chain reaction of evils, hate begetting hate, wars producing more wars, this must be broken or we'll all be plunged into the abyss. But yet there's an even more basic reason why we should love our enemies. Jesus said, "Love your enemies that you may be children of our Father in heaven." We must find the strength to love in order to realize a unique relationship with God. we are potential sons and daughters of God. And through love, that potential becomes actual. We must love our enemies, because only by loving them can we know and experience the full beauty of God's holiness. Let me offer a role model of loving, forgiving, and not judging. Her name is Melanie Wilkes, and most of you know her from the movie Gone with the Wind. Two scenes involving Melanie are particularly significant. In the first, Melanie, Scarlett O'Hara, and Mrs. Meade are leaving the Confederate hospital after a long day of nursing wounded soldiers. As they leave, a gaudily dressed, heavily made up Belle Watling, the town prostitute, approaches them on the steps of the hospital. Scarlett tells Melanie not to talk with Belle, but Melanie receives Belle with complete kindness. Melanie accepts Belle's contribution for the hospital, which neither of the other women would stoop to receive. The second scene is one of the dramatic high points of Gone with the Wind. As most of you remember, all through the story, Scarlett has eyes for Melanie's husband, Ashley. And one day, Scarlett and Ashley are caught in a mad embrace in the lumber shop. Word spreads through town like wildfire. Later that night, Melanie is planning a surprise birthday party for Ashley. And Rhett Butler insists that Scarlett go to the party so that Melanie can have the satisfaction of throwing Scarlett out of her house. Well, Scarlett arrives at Melanie's door dressed in a red gown, wearing as much rouge as Belle Watling. Scarlett's eyes flash coldly like a cornered cat. The fiddler's playing "For He's a Jolly Good Fellow" suddenly stops in mid-phrase, and all the guests gasp. Eyes turn to Melanie. What will she do? Well, Melanie walks across the room, greets Scarlett with open arms, and asks her to help receive the other guests. Then she takes Scarlett by the arm and escorts her through the gauntlet of people who'd all judged her and really wanted to see her thrown out. Well, Melanie Wilkes would never judge another person, even if it appeared that she had every right and opportunity, and even when the whole town would have cheered her if she had. When Melanie dies, Rhett Butler says, "She was the only truly kind person I have ever known." What a wonderful epitaph. As Christians, we are called to be like Melanie, to be kind, to love our neighbor. As disciples of Christ, we are even called to love our enemies and return hate with love. Returning hate with love the way Jesus did may not seem reasonable, but Jesus didn't come from heaven to earth to be reasonable. Jesus came to be transformational. He came to make a difference. Jesus came to change our world and our lives. And to the extent that we follow his teachings, he does change our world and our lives. The year was 1884, and it was a quiet Sunday evening in an English country house. A fire burning in the old fireplace lit up the faces of the people sitting around it. Someone asked Henry Drummond to read from the scriptures. He opened his Bible and read from the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. But now abide faith, hope, and love. These three, and the greatest of these is love.
Then Henry Drummond began to speak about love, the words that can now be found in his classic sermon, The Greatest Thing in the World. Drummond concluded this sermon by suggesting that we look at Christ and his perfect life. If you look at the great sacrifice as Christ laid down his life at Calvary, you must love him. And loving him, you become like him. Love begets love. It is a process of induction. If you put a piece of iron in the presence of an electrical field, that piece of iron will itself become electrified, and in the presence of that electrical field, the iron is changed into a magnet. As long as the iron remains in contact with that field of power, it will continue to attract other pieces of iron to itself. We are like that piece of iron. In the presence of Christ, we experience his love, and we take on his likeness. We are electrified by the Holy Spirit to attract other people to the same love of God that we experience. If you remain side by side with Christ, who loves you and gave himself for you, then you will become a permanent magnet, a permanently attractive force. When Christ's love changes our lives, we can't help but pass it on. If we place another person by thought, word, or deed outside the possibility of human growth and development, we violate God's command to love our neighbor as ourself. Prejudice and hate are exclusive. Love and God are inclusive. This is expressed very well by that little poem that says, "They drew a circle that shut me out. Heretic, rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We made a circle that drew them in." This little poem became flesh during the astounding trials that took place in South Africa after Nelson Mandela took power. Following his release as a political prisoner, Mandela led a peaceful and democratic takeover of the government from those who had been his oppressors. And he set up the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Led by Archbishop Desmond Tutu, the trials held by this commission sought to reconcile the perpetrators of violence and their victims. Archbishop Tutu believed that we can indeed transcend the conflicts of the past. We can hold hands as we realize our common humanity. And in an emotionally charged courtroom during one session of this commission, an elderly black woman stood listening to a white police officer acknowledge his crimes. Officer Vandenbroek acknowledged that, along with others, he had shot this woman's 18-year-old son at point-blank range. He and the others had then partied as they burned her son's body, turning it over and over in the flames until it was reduced to ashes. 8 years later, Vandenbroek and others returned to seize her husband. She was then forced to watch her husband, bound on a woodpile, as they poured gasoline over his body and lit the flames that consumed him. The last words she heard her husband say were, "Forgive them." Now Vandenbroek awaited his judgment. South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission asked the woman what she wanted. "I want three things," she said calmly. I want Mr. Vandenbroek to take me to the place where they burned my son's body. I would like to gather up the dust and give him a decent burial. Second, Mr. Vandenbroek took all my family away from me, and I still have a lot of love to give. Twice a month, I would like him to come to the ghetto and spend a day with me so I can be a mother to him. Third, I would like Mr. Vandenbroek to know that God forgives him and that I forgive him too. I would like to embrace him so that he can know my forgiveness is real. As the elderly woman was led across the courtroom, Vandenbroek fainted, overwhelmed by this woman's strength to love. Someone in the courtroom started singing Amazing Grace, and gradually everyone joined in. That is the Spirit of Christ operating in the world. That's how the war against evil is won. That is the strength to love. Love is not some sentimental and weak response. Love is the force that all the great religions have seen as the supreme unifying principle of life. Love is somehow the key that unlocks the door to ultimate reality. The Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Jewish belief about ultimate reality is beautifully summed up in our Bible in the first letter of John. Let us love one another, for love is from God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. Or as Jesus said, you must love your enemies that you may be children of your Father in heaven. Love your enemies so that you may be a child of God. Amen.